Yes.
We're live. Tucson, Arizona. Vridananda Das Goswami.
My theme music. It's a Vridananda show. Anyway, so any questions? Any topics? You can all come a little closer.
Okay. Sure.
All right.
Yes.
Do you have any good secrets for doing better japa, chanting?
Better japa.
Anything you can say?
It's turned on. Consciousness? We have to, we have to remember, every time we go to chant japa, we have to remember that there is no other way that we're going to make progress. There's no other way we'll be happy. There's no other way we'll get over all of our irrational anxieties. Harirnama, 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 Eva Kevalam. Kalo nastyeva, 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 gatiranyata. If we think there's some other way that we'll ever be happy or ever get out of the mess we've dug ourselves in over the last million lifetimes, it's a mistake. And so it's like someone actually falls into a hole and trying to get out. That's all they think about. It's not like, if you fall into the water and you're trying to save your life, your mind doesn't wander, right? Like when you're trying to save your life, your mind doesn't wander. And so if we realize when we're chanting japa that this is the only way we can save ourselves, that nothing else is going to make us happy, nothing else is going to solve our problems, and then your mind's not going to wander because you're chanting for your life. And Krishna is in his name. Nam namakari bhavadhani ca sarva shakti. But Mahaprabhu said, Itadrashi tava kripa bhagavan namapi dur daiva nidrashani harajani namirava. That's our problem.
It seems like, I know these things, I've heard them, and I'm pretty convinced that if I don't chant more attentive japa, I'm not going to really be any good as a devotee to myself or other people, you know, trying to distribute books, trying to give talks or whatever. But then I feel like I go through these long periods of time and I'm just not improving.
Well,
my mind just goes.
Krishna says in Gita, Machyata Madgata Prana Bodhiyanta Parasparam. Those whose minds are fixed on me, those whose lives are dedicated to me, are enlightening one another. Bodhiyanta Parasparam. That's why we live in communities, so that we can enlighten one another, awaken one another. So just like, for example, you see someone in the temple look like their mind's wandering, you go up to them very humbly and say, you idiot. Just kidding. But that's what we're supposed to do as devotees. We're supposed to be enlightening, waking each other up, not only physically, you know, kicking each other out of sleeping bags or something, but we're supposed to be enlightening one another. Bodhiyanta parasparam, katayanta chamam nityam, always talking about me. When we indulge in frivolous pursuits, then there's payback. We get paid back. Maya, we become subject to miseries. We develop irrational attachments, anxieties, aversions, fears. When in fact, there's really nothing but Krishna. And there's nothing to do but remember Krishna, serve Him, talk about Him. So, bodhiyanta parasparam, enlightening one another, awakening one another, kathayantas chamam nityam, always talking about Him. That's the purpose of devotee association. So we have to fix our minds in Krishna. There's no other way. And the material world is a painful place. It's like you're walking through a forest and narrow path, and on both sides there's all these really sharp, thorn bushes, and so if you go a little bit off the path, you get stuck, literally, you get punctured. So devotional service, narrow path, and if we forget Krishna, if we forget that we are tiny servants of the servant of Krishna, we're not these bodies, if we forget that, then we must suffer. We must suffer. So the whole trick is not to forget it. In fact, all the rules and regulations, whether it's like, you know, washing your hands after you spit on them or, you know, whatever, I mean, all the rules and regulations are just to remember Krishna and not forget him. Smarta vyaksatatam Vishnu. Vishnu is always to be remembered. Vismarta vyo najatu, never to be forgotten. Which in Sanskrit is vismarta vyo, disremembered. So never to be forgotten. Sarve vidhini shedat su etayori vakinkara. All the do's and don'ts are servants of these two. Every rule that do this is a servant of one do, and that is do remember Krishna. And every prohibition, injunctions and prohibitions, every prohibition is a servant of one, don't forget Krishna. So that's it. We all get entangled, we get, you know, whatever. We drift. It's like, I remember when I was a kid growing up, I grew up in the quaint little village of Los Angeles. And we used to go to Santa Monica in the summer, swim. That was the closest beach to me. And there was, a lot of times there'd be an undertow, so you'd put your towel down, go in the water, and you'd think you were just standing in the same place, but after about 5 or 10 minutes, you'd gone about a block down the beach. Then you had, I remember that, you know, constantly having to walk back. And so there is a material undertow in this world. And so if you just think you're kind of standing in the same place, actually you'll be pulled away. Then you have to walk back. So we have to be conscious of that undertow and constantly be endeavoring to keep ourselves in Krishna consciousness, because the alternative is we're just going to end up with a lot of pie in our face over and over again. And suffering, after a while, it's just like you get tired of suffering. You know, suffering gets old. And after a while, you just realize, I don't think I want to do this anymore. I mean, suffer. And so you have to get serious about Krishna consciousness. And there's no other way except the holy name. You know, we tried everything else and it just doesn't work. Maya is like, you know, it's like one of those casinos in Las Vegas where the house always wins. And you see those, you know, poor, sort of sincere imbeciles that throw all their money away. So, it's just never going to work. Trying to enjoy this world is never going to work. So try it this way, try it that way, I got a new angle. It's like those losers you see, they're always in debt, they've always got big plans, how they make a lot of money, and they're always broke, and they're always... You know, they always got a surefire way to make $1 million in 3 days, and they're always trying to borrow something from you. And so that's material life. You know, we've always got a new angle. Hey, Louie, I got a new angle. So that's material life. You know, we've always got a new angle. I figured it out. You know, I'm gonna win this one. I tried to enjoy that and it didn't work, but this time I can make this adjustment and I won't do that and I will do this and now I'll enjoy it. And it's like, no. So we have to come to the point of becoming, as Prabhupada often said, materially exhausted. Like, uncle, you know, white flag, I have to tap out with sense gratification. You know, mixed martial arts. Yeah, they tap out. So you got to come to the point where you sort of tap out of sense gratification. I can't take it. And that's what Krishna does. Krishna is so kind because all of us have our material fantasies. Like, oh, I'd like to have this situation or be with this kind of person or blah, blah, blah. We all have our fantasies. We all have our scheme, our angle of how we can actually be happy in this world. And in a sense, it's natural because we do have our quote-unquote human condition. And we are a spirit soul, but we've got our human condition. And even Krishna says you have to sort of deal with your human condition. You can't eat too much or too little. You can't sleep too much or too little. And so, as long as we have these gorgeous material bodies, we have to deal with them. So that's why Prabhupada said it's a razor's edge, because you can't just deny or ignore your human condition. You have to deal with it. We need a certain amount of bodily, whatever, gratification. You have to eat, we have to get enough rest, you have to have a certain amount of emotional satisfaction. And those are just basic human needs that we can't deny. At the same time, so how do you... I think the secret is here, since I'm on a roll here with my new secret katha. I think the secret is that we have to be thinking of Krishna. Our intention, as they always say in yoga classes, fix your intention and breathe. So we have to fix our intention that we want to please Krishna. And then Krishna will naturally satisfy our human needs. And if I'm trying to satisfy them, instead of trying to satisfy Krishna, I'm going to end up suffering. So what Krishna's saying is, don't try to enjoy, but also don't artificially reject facilities that he sends so that you can be materially peaceful. In other words, if Krishna provides you nice prasadam, don't make a show of not eating, because then you go a little crazy. You know, whatever, something will happen. So we should eat a normal, medium amount of prasadam. Don't try to be a great, you know, tapasvi, austerity person, and don't try to gratify your senses. That's the picture Krishna gives us. Focus on pleasing Krishna and just accept what Krishna provides you moderately without trying to enjoy it. Any other questions? Not we'll play rainy day games. What kinds of games you play on rainy days, right? Since you can't go out on the gym field. Yes.
There's a verse, when I first was studying Krishna consciousness, I would run into different verses in the Bhagavad Gita where it talks, for example, like a person in divine consciousness, whether they're doing this or that or that, or this, they're just aware that the senses are in contact with their objects. And the person is aloof from that. So I kind of got the impression, because I read a lot before I started really participating in Krishna consciousness, that as one would advance, you would almost...
Did you read the fine print?
Of course not. But it seemed to me that the conclusion was that you wouldn't, that somebody that was very advanced, they wouldn't be feeling anything in the sense that the cold is there, or, you know, they stub their toe. In other words, there would be some, you know, of course, because we're spirit souls and the body is not who we are.
Well, it's like, imagine, for example, if there's a hot surface that says don't touch. So if you are, let's say, 3 feet from that surface, you feel the heat, but you don't burn yourself. So in the same way, if you have a little psychological distance from your body, you experience what the body experiences, but there's some distance from it. You're not like right on the hot burning surface. So that distance is what saves us.
So that's the aloofness. In other words, you're
yeah,
I guess you could say psychologically aware of it, but not...
Cognitive, just aware of it. But yeah, you're aware.
But we still cry out in pain, or...
Well, even the residents of Vrindavan cried out to Krishna when there's a forest fire. Or sometimes we have this idea that to be Krishna conscious means you're not even here at all. But if we look at the Bhagavatam, the residents of Vrindavan, when there was a big demon came or fire or something, they cried out to Krishna. It's not like there's a difference between premeditatively, like, decide, okay, I'm going to pray to Krishna, give me this, and give me that, I want all these material things. That's one thing. But when you're living your life and just something shocking happens, of course you cry out to Krishna. It's just, I mean, you would be crazy if you didn't. It would be completely unnatural. It's not a question of trying to exploit Krishna by praying for material things. It's just a spontaneous reaction. Mm-hmm. If there's something shocking, you just cry out to Krishna. And even the residents of Vrindavan did that. So, but in normal circumstances, we have to get some distance from the body. That's why we have to realize that we get sucked in. It's like we get sucker punched every time. You know, because the body, there's some sensations that are pleasing to the body or mind, so we get drawn in. Because we want more. Ooh, that really feels good. And so we get drawn in, and then when you get drawn in, you get punched. And because you went too close, the punch really hurts. So the secret is that even though something may appear to feel good emotionally or physically, just stay away because there's a flip side to it. At the old days, we used to buy those 45 RPM records. Did you ever get those? And there's always like there was one popular song you wanted and you had to buy the flip side which you didn't want. And you couldn't just buy, you know, you couldn't just buy the song you wanted. You had to buy both sides of the record. So you can't just approach a material situation and say, I'll just take the happiness there if you don't mind. No, you got to take both sides of it. Yeah, you can't collect one side of a coin. I mean, it's... So if we want the cheap thrills, to quote Big Brother in the Holding Company, if we want the cheap thrills, then you got to take the misery too. They go together. You can't. They go together. You have to take both of them. So next time we're tempted to try to enjoy, we should remember that we're going to have to suffer. That's just the way it is. So we can distance ourselves, not from other people, not from our duties, but distance ourselves from that identification. And ultimately, Krishna's doing everything. Ultimately, we just work here. And Krishna's actually in charge. It's actually his program, and we have to remember that. No one belongs to us. This is my wife, this is my husband, these are my children, these are my parents, these are my siblings. It's just a formula for pain. We certainly can and should feel affection for others. We have duties, we have special duties to certain people. Maybe family members or people in the community. So it's not that we don't have duties or don't feel affection. But there's a type of attachment. Like if you think my husband, my wife, my whatever, key word is my. I actually experienced this 1993, just after I went to Harvard, began at Harvard. My youngest brother passed away from a disease, and so naturally it's a little shocking. And I remember that it's like whenever I thought my brother passed away, it was painful. And then when I thought Krishna took one of his spirit souls, it wasn't painful. And so I saw very clearly that it was really, when I say my brother, that wasn't just a speech habit. That was a very deep-rooted mistake to think that this person belongs to me somehow. And so it's funny because I've explained before all this criticism of family attachment. The real flaw in family attachment is that when someone's attached, they don't really love the other person enough. Because to think that someone is my husband, my wife, my sibling, my parents, my children, whatever, that's not love. That's called possessiveness. And it's, there's a real sense in which this person is mine. and we have to let go of that. And until you, you know, people, it's funny because in the early days of the movement, we were all very zealous and, you know, spit at the thought of normal human qualities. But then it kind of went to the other extreme of where somehow attachment to certain people in our lives is fully justified, and not to be attached to these people is to be inhuman and to be artificial and just not to be a good person. But actually, attachment is not love. Attachment is not love. As much as we want to think it is, it's not. And so no one's telling you not to love the people in your family. We're just saying don't be attached to them. And by attachment, we mean a material desire to enjoy them. Because how can you love someone if you're trying to enjoy them? And so if I'm thinking that this is my husband, my wife, my this, you know, it goes through the whole kinship list again. If we're thinking this is mine, and we're trying, then there's actually an impurity. There is a contamination of love. You don't simply love them, you're trying to enjoy possessing that, like you're proud of your family. It's the sense that these are my people, and, you know, and they are always be there for me, and always, it's just, it's an illusion, in the sense that, first of all, they won't always be there for you, because, you know, everybody's going to go flying off into the wild blue yonder of karma. So, attachment is not love. Attachment is not love. And that's why Krishna is always wrapping the knuckles of our subtle body and trying to get us to let go, because it's not love. And we flatter ourselves that we're loving someone when actually we're just sort of grooving on the contaminated excitement of thinking this is my whatever. But yeah, we have to let go. And all of us, you know, we're all, you know, someone may be more advanced or less advanced, but we're all basically dealing with the same problem. We're all dealing with the same problem. We have to let go. We said really, really have to let go. And give up completely the idea that another soul belongs to us. Because they really don't. Souls really belong to Krishna. That's why you see, for example, it's very interesting to see in characteristic of third world countries, or I mean, which you can see in every country, some people are like that, is that it's like you only have so much emotional capital. It's like you have so much money. So if you spend it here, you can't spend it there. And so we have a finite quantity of emotional capital. And what you see in certain cultures is that they have this obsessive attachment to family. And they couldn't care less about the public. Like the sense of, in other words, that's why people throw trash in the streets. That's why people don't bother fixing their houses up on the outside, only on the inside. That's why public services are so lousy and you have to bribe people to get anything done. Because they've spent all their emotional capital on their false ego attachments. Like my family and friends. And if you're not family or... In other words, if you're family or friend, the law doesn't matter. You know, just tell me what you need. And if you're not family or friend, the law doesn't matter. Just tell me how much you'll give me. Isn't it? So that is, even, you know, sociologists have noted this a long time ago. That's one of the symptoms of corrupted lower level societies. Is that people, all of their loyalty, all of their affection is invested into like my little group. And there's just nothing left for the public. Whereas you see in other cultures where people really do care about the public matters. Not because it's my family, not because they're my friends, but because they're people. They're, in a sense, it's obviously not spiritual in and of itself, but it's definitely moving in the right direction. It's moving towards a more universal acceptance So that tribalism, like everything for my tribe and nothing for other tribes, it's just basically, it's barbaric. It's barbaric, and that's why when you go to countries like that or neighborhoods like that, they're so trashy.
So, you know, so you said it's very, very nice and beautiful that attachment is not actually love. That is also we see from that pastimes of Billabong Thakur also, like when he goes to that Chitamani, that prostitute, when he says, I love you, this thing, and she says, no, this is your attachment. He says, you don't love me. You feel attachment, if you have this kind of attachment with Krishna, then all these things are. But how Maharaj, like, you know, I have also family, you know, my family members. So sometimes I feel that this attachment is because of love. Or because of the love, there is attachment. So how can we separate pure love and no attachment?
You have to always see Krishna there. In other words, whenever you think of your wife or your children or your parents, mm-hmm. you have to see Krishna there. And where there's Krishna, there's no darkness. It's like where there's light, there's no darkness. And so it's not a question of rejecting your family. Mm-hmm. It's a question of putting Krishna there and forcing your mind to see that these people belong to Krishna. Mm-hmm. That these people belong to Krishna, and that Krishna, it's a very serious responsibility. They're spirit souls, so if Krishna has given you that duty to take care of some souls, you have to, of course, you have to do it very seriously. Because so when you're Krishna conscious, and you're taking care of your family for Krishna, you don't become sloppy or negligent. It's actually the opposite. You're quite conscientious, but it's for Krishna. It's for Krishna. And you see them in relation to Krishna. And that way, you can actually love them. And you never forget that what's really important is that they go back to Krishna. Of course, they have to eat food, they have to have a place to stay, and so on and so forth. There are certain basic human needs we all have. But still, it's a question of adding Krishna, not removing the family, but adding Krishna.
So, Maharaj, does it imply that we have to become unconditional and unexpecting in our relations? And it's like, for example, someone is like not that much into Krishna consciousness, and like one is a practicing devotee. So that person will try to think that, you know, I should see everyone as Krishna's servant rather than my own servants or my own relations. So maybe, for example, like there is a devotee, you know, he'll say to his relatives that, you know, please satisfy Lord Krishna, not don't satisfy me, don't try to satisfy, exchange love with me. So that person might think that...
Well, I don't think you'd say that. I mean, why would you say that? If you are serving Krishna, and a relative of yours loves you, then they're loving a devotee. So why would you tell them not to love you?
So, like, how to draw a line between... Sometimes it is very confusing that, like, if they love us, then we get kind of attached, and also we start...
It gets back to Harinama. That's our human condition, that we are, you know, all of us are very sticky, and we latch on, you know, we just stick to things. That's just the way we are. We're just these little sticky, subtle bodies that wherever they touch, you know, they just become attached. So the only hope is Harinam. I haven't figured out any other way. I mean, if I do, I'll let you know, but I haven't figured it out yet. The only thing that works for me is just chanting Krishna's names. Chanting Krishna's names, associating, and Krishna says in Gita, Bodhiyanta Parasparam. What are we doing now? We're enlightening one another. We're trying to. We're talking about Krishna. So yes, you know, right now we are sticky. You know, we stick to things. And so imagine, like, you're sticky and you meet someone else and they're sticky, and it's like a double bond. It's like double bond glue or something. So yeah, people stick to each other, but okay, so that's the status quo. That's where we're at. And then you go to work, you start chanting, you start praying, crying out to Krishna, trying to serve Krishna. You got to start somewhere.
And how far do we, like, draw a line in terms of attachment to devotees and attachment?
You draw the line, you don't have to draw the line, you just have to obey Krishna. You just have to become, that's what Krishna said, Vyavasayatmi ka buddhir, ekeha kuru nandana. Our mind is fixed on one thing, not like doing all these sort of like, raga metrics, trying to measure. I mean, in a sense, a certain amount of self-awareness is good. But we're trying to please Krishna, we're trying to be Krishna conscious, and we're trying to follow Krishna's plan for our life, wherever it takes us. And we trust that Krishna will make the best arrangement. Krishna is not going to, psychologically annihilate your family. You just have to trust Krishna. We try to please Krishna. We try to be Krishna conscious. We try to understand that I'm spirit soul. First, understand who you are. You are a spirit soul. So if you see yourself as you really are, and if you see your relatives as they really are, no problem. Because you see everyone as a spiritual being. So rather than just sort of diving into the ignorance and trying to fight against it, try to understand that you're a spirit soul. Try to see everyone in relation to Krishna. Try to see everyone as part of Krishna. It's a positive thing. And if you see everyone as part of Krishna, you automatically have the right feelings and do the right things. That's a nice thing, isn't it, about Krishna consciousness? You don't have to like spend your whole life obsessing about over your attachments or this or that. We can just really go for Krishna. Try to fix our minds in Krishna, see ourselves as spirit soul, and just totally give ourselves to Krishna. And if you do that, you'll see everything the way it really is. That's why Krishna says, Bahushaka Hinantascha, Buddha Yogya Sainya, those whose consciousness is not really determined to be Krishna conscious. They're going crazy. Financial problems, emotional problems, family problems, work problems, this, that. Isn't it? You spend your whole day just going from this problem to that problem. But if you're Krishna conscious, you spend your whole day just coming closer to Krishna, and feeling greater and greater happiness, and family, work, this, that, whatever. You see it within Krishna. Krishna says, one who sees everything in me, one who sees me everywhere, Jomang Pashyati Sarvatra, Jomayi Sarvam Pashyati. One who sees me everywhere and everything in me is never lost to me, and I'm never lost to him. So, that's the thing. Don't just focus on Krishna, and then you'll see your family properly, and you'll do the right thing, and they'll be satisfied. As long as you give the money. So, any other questions?
Say that.
What's that?
You didn't say that. As long as you give the money. That's part of it, though. Sure.
That's the bottom line. No, of course it's not everything, but...
Makes a difference. But that, too, is an illusion. I know with my children, I saw myself as provider for a long time, and then I just realized I'm not the provider. I can't take care of them. They have so many needs, and I'm just limited. So
yeah, we have to take shelter of Krishna.
Yeah.
If you see yourself as an instrument of Krishna, I'm just the servant of the servant of Krishna. That's all. I'm just the servant of the servant of Krishna. So Krishna has given me certain duties, whatever. I'm just his servant. Whatever I'm doing is for his pleasure. Because otherwise, you get your little lotus heart broken all the time. It's like you become attached to someone, and then they don't appreciate what you've done for them. They're not grateful. They don't reciprocate. And it's just, yuck. Who needs that? We could actually be happy instead of wallowing in all that crud. So when, even in our dealings with family members, just try to please Krishna. And if I try to please Krishna by my actions, if he's pleased, even if the other person doesn't appreciate, doesn't reciprocate, whatever, it's like, who cares? My goal is to please Krishna. I did please Krishna, hopefully. And therefore I'm happy. And the other person has certain cognitive impairment, that's their problem. It's like if you're an emergency room physician, You know, you can't say, well, I'm an emergency room physician, but I can't stand the sight of blood. If we're going to be in this world trying to serve Krishna, we have to have the power to love people but not be attached to them. It just, like, whatever. They belong to Krishna. They're within Krishna. Krishna's been taking care of this person for trillions of years. And Krishna will continue to protect and take care of this person. And therefore, I just try to please Krishna by doing my duties. Yes, son of the Ganges. By the way, he's the son of the Ganges, although he's not quite as liquid as you would think.
I remember one devotee was telling me that he's was chanting. He thought very attentively and very feelingly, but he felt like Krishna wasn't actually hearing him.
Well, Krishna's not deaf. But, I mean, that's the whole thing. Sometimes we can feel that we're chanting attentively and feelingly. It's, if you think of relationships we have with other people, some people sort of say the right things and all that, but they're just, you don't really feel they're, you know what I mean? You don't really feel they care about you that much. So there can be a type of sort of niceness about, you know, okay, we should chant like this, and so you kind of, how should I put it? It's almost like you are chanting with feeling, but in a sort of an official way, like, okay, we're supposed to have feeling, so Hare Krishna, Hare Krishna. It's not, it's just on, it can just be on a certain level, but you're not really just giving yourself completely to Krishna.
Maybe it just takes some time.
I think Krishna, there can be a certain pride, there's all kinds of things. My experience is that if we really open our hearts to Krishna, he's there. I don't think that, you know, and so if someone, of course, I mean, I don't want to judge, actually I do want to judge everyone, but I know I shouldn't. So, in that sense, I don't want to judge another person, but if someone's chanting for a long time with attention and feelings and all that, and they don't feel anything, it's something wrong. Prabhupada said that. Prabhupada said if you're practicing Krishna consciousness, you're not happy, you're doing something wrong. I mean, there are human relationships like that. One person feels I was really nice, but the other person kind of feels like you're not really there for me. It's just kind of like you're saying certain things, but you don't feel the other person's really there. So if that person didn't feel Krishna was there, Krishna probably didn't feel that person was there, even though that person was... felt that they were chanting with attention and feeling. Krishna says he reciprocates, and I believe him. And Krishna may test us in different ways, as we know. So, any other question?
If suppose we commit some offenses and we sincerely go out and seek the mercy of the devotee, so then does Krishna, because I have read one purport by Srila Prabhupada on his Iskcon Desiree that even though if we, like, the devotees may forgive each other, but Krishna is very strict on this matter. He will never forget insult to his devotees. So,
well, I mean, we have to be practical here. I mean, Krishna says in the Gita, I am the father and the mother. What happens in the family? If you do something bad to one of your siblings, you know, you're obviously, and let's say you go to your brother or sister and you say, I'm sorry, and they say it's okay, but your parents are so angry. It doesn't mean literally that Krishna will never forgive you. That it's, you know, I mean, Krishna's the supreme parent. It's just common sense. How, you know, what Krishna feels and any good parent would feel. He's a real person. Krishna's a person. He's the supreme parent. So, any other question? If not, maybe we'll stop here. Take a little prasadam. Do what devotees do best. I'll breathe. Yes.
I was wondering if we can have a group photo in front of.
Sure. Yeah. Who's going to hold the soccer ball?
Yeah. Or the book.
All right. Hare Krishna.
Thank you so much.